You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Frans van Lent. He's calling from Rotterdam in the Netherlands. Frans, thanks so much for being with me today.
Yes, you're welcome. Hi.
So, Frans, to begin with, I know you're not actually in Rotterdam. You're in a small town near there. Can you just tell me a little bit about where your studio is and exactly what town that is? I'm curious just to what it looks like.
Yeah, well, Rotterdam is, as you might know, quite a new city. It's bombed in the Second World War, and there's all new buildings. And Dordrecht is in the neighborhood, and this is, in fact, the oldest city of Holland, of this province. And there are many 17th century buildings here, and it's only, well, about 50 minutes to the center of Rotterdam by train, so really nearby.
And is your studio in one of these 17th century buildings?
Yeah, that's right. My studio is in an old school building, a boys' school. Many of the artist studios here in the Netherlands are made in old school buildings because they don't demolish them usually, but they just renovate them into studios. So it's really a nice place to work, and many young children have been educated in my studio. That's a nice idea.
That is a nice idea. And let's talk about your work. So I know you've done a number of things, but perhaps we could talk about what you're working on at the moment. I don't know if it's a parallel walk or if there's something else that you're working on that we should be talking about.
Yeah, well, there are at this moment two things I'm working on. I'm going to do a performance half December, and it has to do with a walk in the city, but I'm not quite sure. It's going to be in London, in the nunnery, around the nunnery, not in the nunnery itself. And I'm going to do in the first weeks of January the last parallel show, the last number 10, and that's sort of a final thing that really makes me very happy. It's a sort of a project that I'm doing in the last 1.5 year.
So let's talk about that. How did that, if you could describe that project and what's happened in the last 1.5 years, and we're talking about a parallel walk, correct?
Yeah, well, the parallel walk is just one thing that I recently did together with the Spanish artist Elia Torricilla. And that's just a sort of a long distance performance, and I really like to do game-like performances like that. But in 2014, I started with doing performances together with the people that I see as the public of these performances, to give them the same sort of experience as I have as a performer, not to be an audience, but to be part of it. And then I thought of making a sort of a festival, and that became the Unnoticed Art Festival. And I asked artists from all over the world to send in concepts for performances that should be executed by other people. And there was a lot of response to that. And finally, we made a program of 35 performances. And I made an open call for people who wanted to execute them. And it was not only professionals, but also non-professional people interested in the medium. And then I organized a festival in a city in the Netherlands. And in one weekend, we did 35 performances of all sorts of artists in the center of a city, the city of Haarlem, and nobody in this city was aware of the fact that this festival was happening. So probably nobody will have noticed this art. It's an art performance festival. And that is a sort of a definition of what I'm working with. I really like to work with performance as a medium in the street and not in the theater or not in an art space, but just in the living space of people. And so I sort of avoid the really art context around it, and that makes people deal in a different way with performances.
Right. Instead of getting the people coming to these performances and art events that are, you know, what I would call the converted people already know art and like it and seek it out. Now it's reaching people who may not even know it is art, and therefore it's more present. So let's talk a little bit about what actually happened in Ireland. Like you were saying, in all these performances, many of which were not even recognized as art happening in the street, can you tell me some of what those performances actually were that people might have seen?
Yeah, there were very, very simple ones with it. For instance, there was a performance of Julie Rothman. That's an American artist, and she wrote a performance in just one line. It's called Standing Piece, and the line is standing awkwardly at the periphery. And this is a description that you could really use in all sorts of situations. So it's a sort of a message with which you go on the street and you just find sorts of peripheries, and you do what you're supposed to do. You stand awkwardly at these peripheries. It's really a nice thing to do. It's a very, very nice experience. But as you will understand, nobody will notice you doing this. This is really something very private, in fact. Other performances are one of the performances I myself wrote was a walk through the center of the city, and it were in fact two walks. One walk you had to do in the morning as a group, if possible, and you had to walk in a way with using a lot of intuition and responding to impulses and just go wherever you want to go at the moment you wanted to go there. And then in the afternoon, a few hours later, you had to repeat this walk exactly as possible. So there was no intuition involved anymore, no impulses. It was just memory and trying very hard to remember where you crossed the street and what window you went to and what streets you went in next time and so on and so on. It's just these sorts of performances. There are all sorts of artists working in different ways, and they're all very much attracted by this idea of doing things in a non-art context.
And all of the performances were similar in the sense that none of them drew attention to themselves and would be hard to find even if you were looking for them.
Yes, well, not all of them. There were performances that were really very much working with passers-by. For instance, there was a performance of a Dutch artist, and he had a performance that with young people that were hanging around supermarkets. And usually these people are seen as a pain in the ass, a pain in the beep in American radio. But in this situation, he trained these young performers to discuss philosophical and art theoretic contents, and he tried to make them to involve other people into these discussions, and it's really very much focused on other people, but nobody is really noticing the fact that it's an art piece. It's just somebody who is asking them something, and they can answer or not. But it's not in the way that they're all only working, only doing things for themselves. It's also really every now and then directing to the passers-by, to other people.
That's fascinating. And what's been the reaction to this? You say you're doing one more last one of this. Is that the series you meant? Is this performance that's coming up will be an iteration of what you just spoke of?
Yeah, well, I have to tell a bit more because I did after the festival. I did this concept bag. That's a website for open source performances. That you can go there and find your own performance if you want, and just execute the work whenever you want and with whom you want. And the third thing was called the parallel show, and that was really something for artists, for professionals. And this works like I ask somebody I know, an artist in another city, to host a parallel show, and he or she looks for a venue, an art venue, where we could do it. And then a certain date that we come together, and then he or she asks two other persons, other artists to join, and I bring one other artist to join, so we with four or five people, and then I buy tickets at the venue. We're just visitors, nothing else. Nobody knows who are coming, and then we just look around in the museum and look at the architecture, at the shows that are there, and the people and the attendants. And then at lunchtime, during the lunch, we discuss what we could do. And in the afternoon, we carry out all sorts of performances in the spaces of the museum. And then afterwards, we leave at closing time of the museum. And afterwards, everybody writes a sort of a personal report, send it to me, and I put it on the website. And when it's all on the website, I let the museum, the staff of the museum, know that we have been there, and I thank you for the hospitality, of which they don't know nothing, of course. And so this last year, I did it in 9 occasions in all sorts of cities in Europe, in fact. And the last one, number 10, will be in New York. So I'm really happy to do that. I won't tell you when exactly, and I won't tell you where, because that wouldn't fit the concept, of course. But I'm really looking forward to that. So I asked an artist in New York to organize this in a certain art venue, and to get some artists around that will join him. And I go there together with one artist to New York, and we do it together there.
That's exciting. I want to ask you a little bit about, before we talk about the walk and other things, a little bit about the art establishment reaction, because my wife and myself are, you may or may not know, are also performance artists, and we had an experience that when we were in the Whitney Museum and we were giving out hugs and foot washing. So that's the kind of performance we were doing there, and they asked us to do a performance for the party at the Whitney Museum. And I always think there's a misunderstanding. They think somehow we're artists that get on stage. So we told them the performance we were going to do is, we had just had a child that was 2 years old, and we said, we're going to have photographs of our child in our wallet. And if people ask us what the performance is we're doing, we're going to show them pictures of our child and say, you know, isn't he wonderful, you know? Right? So what happened was, nobody asked us during the party what our performance was, so we never showed the images, because typically, you know, nobody really wants to look at images of other people's children, right? So so that was fine. It was okay for us. But then we got a letter from the director of the museum that said, "Thank you so much for the performance. I personally enjoyed it, and I really want to thank you for doing it." So. So it made me think, you know, I mean, I responded by saying, well, thank you for also saying you were going to visit our studio. Let's meet next week, you know, because I realized there's kind of a disconnect. Do things like that happen with you at all in this kind of situation?
Yeah, well, it's in the same way it can't happen, because nobody in the museum knows that we are there, not as visitors, but as artists. And our aims are a bit different, I think, because it's very much this parallel show is very much focused on the process of conceiving work more than on presentation to people. We don't have an audience there. There are many people walking there, but they're just people walking there. There are other people. We don't have a special connection with that. So what makes it so interesting is, if you usually go to a museum, then the main part is by the art that is hanging and standing in the museum, and that's where you're there for, where all people are there for. And in this situation, it's not only that, but it's, for a big part, it's also the architectural qualities of the space, and the way the attendants look at you and look at the work and how they are responding to things. And the people that are walking through the rooms, and we use this all in the work. It's not into one direction. It's not meant to actually connect to people. It's more meant to use this museum as a laboratory of performative techniques, things like that. It's very strange, but last weekend we did number 9, and we did it in Berlin, in the Stasi Museum in Berlin, which is not an art museum, which is a very historical museum, in fact. And there are many people. It's a very special museum, because it's not a museum for people who like history, but it's for a main part, it's a museum for people who were living in the time of the Stasi and who had really suffered on the Stasi. And so the people who are walking there are very much related to the subject they're studying at that moment, which is a completely different sort of situation. And the performances we did there were all very very modest, very small in proportions, not really visible. And for instance, one very funny one, in my opinion, was one of the artists. Went to the toilet in this museum, And he looked up on his telephone, he looked up Russian talk radio, and he very, very softly put on this Russian talk radio in the toilet, which is really very beautiful, because these people have a sort of a relation with Russian, of course. They couldn't really understand what was said, because it was really very, very soft. But there was definitely somebody speaking Russian there, somewhere in this toilet. It's really sort of a thing, sort of a secret thing that had a beautiful relation with his ideas of the Stasi and so on. It's really very nice to do.
And so there are going to be the one in New York is coming up, which of course you can't give us a location or
time.
And will this be the end of it, or will you keep doing this? Because with the website and the way it's set up, it sounds like it could go on endlessly.
Yeah, well, this is I just thought that the first series should be 10, and then it's over. And I started now with writing a book about it, which is partly the texts on the website and partly some email discussions with participants about the all different sort of aspects of the parallel show. And so this is going to be defined in a book, you might say. And then I guess there will also be a second series, because it's not over. There are new plans all the time. In fact, a few weeks ago, I got a telephone call from somebody who is working in Helsinki in Finland. And he suggested that we could use the parallel show with something like WhatsApp messages together. And this was really a very nice coincidence, because I just did this parallel walk. And this parallel walk was, in fact, directed by WhatsApp messages. And so I'm thinking about that. Maybe I get a new sort of form for a second series, and which change a bit the experiment. And it must be exciting. That's the idea. It must be an experiment for us. That's the most important.
Very interesting. And so your relationship to museums is what? Because on one hand, this is the kind of work that, of course, museums would like to have. They would like to have it, you know, programmed or be part of it, because it's not part of them. You know, obviously they want what they can't quite have. You know, I mean, Tino Segal was maybe one direction of that, but he's very much a part of the market and the system.
Yes,
your work, it would seem these ideas can't really be taken by the museum. In fact, they resist it by their nature. So how do you work with institutions? And are you interested in working with institutions, or is it specifically that you don't want to work with these type of institutions?
Yeah, well, I am interested in that, but it's nothing that I have no plans for that. So this means that if somebody wants to do a project, then this should be a completely new project, and it would be completely based on the fact that we're going to work together with a museum. The reason that I chose museums for the parallel show is that they are places of perceiving. People are there just for one reason, and that's to get all this information inside. And that's something that really appeals to me. It doesn't have an aspect of provocative things, or it's not cynical or something. Not at all. It's really very much in fact, myself, I really enjoy museums. I enjoy them before much more than I do now, because I think it's very crowded now. I'm very much focused on education, and I really like this tomb-like white spaces with a sort of absolute silent relation to the art that is showed. And I can remember that the way I walked into this spaces with big paintings and nobody else there, that I already felt it as a sort of that you become in a performative way part of the work you're looking at. So I have a sort of a relation that is very positive in those kind of things. But there's no working relations with museums. You're right in there.
To me, it really brings it draws attention to some of those museums, nevertheless, and kind of, as you say, in a sense, or as I'm understanding it, also brings life into them in a way that's different than anything they've had before. So as you move into the future with these, you're doing a few more, as well as the walk. Should we talk a little bit about the walk you're doing around the nunnery?
Yeah.
Yeah. What will happen there exactly?
In the nunnery, you mean? I'm going to do this with two other artists, and we are trying to probably. I'm not really completely wrote it out now, but we're probably going to go towards the nunnery in very different ways, by train, walking, by car, and things like that. And we just use this nunnery as a sort of a hub between our walks. So we go there and we leave again, and we go there and we leave again. And the public will be in the nunnery. They can only see us coming and going, and there is no real connection to the walks or to the transportation itself. There is only this knowing that it's... Well, it's a sort of a drawing, you might say. It's sort of a drawing on a map. It's not really finished. I'm working on it, as you probably hear.
Okay. Very good. And in terms of also, which is, you know, a different aspect of this, your work isn't part of the marketplace traditionally. So how is it supported or funded so it can continue? It doesn't sound like it needs a lot of funds to operate, but is there a system of funding or support?
Yeah, well, there's not much anymore, but every now and then a project gets funded by the government. And I try to sometimes a lecture pays some money, and it's that sort of attitude that really gets it going. And for the rest, I'm teaching at an art school in Rotterdam, and this is also very much helpful. And I'm really happy to have that because it gives me a sort of a freedom in the choices I make. So it's really it's a nice combination, and there's fortunately no problem in that. But it's right.
That is very fortunate, because really you know that's the idea to make the freedom of choices is I think so important to any artist's career, which does start to be problematic when sales are relied upon or pursued.
Yeah, that's what I think, and so in a way, I'm really happy with the situation I'm in, and I really want to direct my work only because of what it's about, and not because how it functions in society, how it brings money in the pocket.
I like that. Before we go, I want to ask you the question that I ask almost everyone, which is there a book you're reading now that you'd want to share with us, or two, whatever it is, could be off the topic or not?
Yeah, well, it is a sort of, it's not off topic. It's a book that when I read something from Alan Kaprow long ago, I found this book in his writings. That's Irvin Goffman, The Presentations of Self in Everyday Life. And I can't say that I'm really reading it from start till the end, but I'm every now and then I'm reading parts of it, because it's a very interesting sort of approach in how people perform in public situations. And this is very much related to what I do, I think.
And the title of that book?
The Presentation of Self in Everyday Life. It's Irvin Goffman is a sociologist. I can't say it in English, but sociologist. It's a book from, I think, late 50s, start of the 60s, something like that.
Franz, I want to thank you for talking with me today. It's really been a pleasure. I love talking with you.
Okay, thank you very much, and I'm really happy that I was on the show.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.